Welcome to Touchstone. This is a weekly poetry space. Why poetry? Well, it seems to me that currently in this crazy life in the fast lane existence we've all got now, the carefully constructed phrase and the dreamily distilled essence, that very alchemy of poetry, has been forgotten, left lying by the wayside. So I want to remind everyone just how gorgeous the written word can be, how it makes our lives richer and suddenly more meaningful. I'm CJ, by the way. I'm a writer, but I've also been a teacher, a journalist, a publisher, and even briefly a speechwriter for a politician. Very briefly. In future weeks, I'll be talking to guests for their take on the art and craft of poetry. But for now, here's a selection of just a few of my favourite poems. Make yourself at home, get yourself comfortable. I'll start with a famous poem, which was published in 1833. Alfred Lord Tennyson's Ulysses is a man getting on in his years, facing his mortality, determined to do what he finds meaningful throughout the last of his days. Since the poet was born in 1809, he was just 24 when he penned it. Not an elderly man at all. Mind you, T.S. Eliot was only 29 when he wrote Prufrock, another favourite poem of mine. Using classical mythology in what would have been for an educated person the well-known and possibly well-loved character of Ulysses allowed Tennyson to imagine how that man would have responded to the ageing process. Poets, however, do tend to be keenly aware of their own mortality and that of others, as several of the poems I'm reading today may demonstrate. Ulysses by Alfred Lord Tennyson. It little profits that an idle king by this still hearth among these barren crags, matched with an aged wife, I meet and dole unequal laws unto a savage race that hoard and sleep and feed and know not me. I cannot rest from travel. I will drink life to the lees. All times I have enjoyed greatly. Have suffered greatly, both with those that loved me, and alone, on shore, and when through scudding drifts the rainy Hyades vexed the dim sea. I am become a name, for always roaming with a hungry heart, much have I seen and known, cities of men, and manners, climates, councils, governments, myself not least, but honoured of them all, and drunk delight of battle with my peers, far on the ringing plains of windy Troy. I am a part of all I have met, yet all experience is an arch where through gleams that untravelled world whose margin fades for ever and for ever when I move. How dull it is to pause, to make an end, to rust unburnished, not to shine in use, as though to breathe were life. Life piled on life were all too little, and of one to me little remains. But every hour is saved from that eternal silence. Something more, a bringer of new things. And vile it were for some three suns to store and hoard myself. And this grey spirit, yearning in desire to follow knowledge like a sinking star beyond the utmost bound of human thought. This is my son, mine own Telemachus, to whom I leave the sceptre and the isle, well loved of me, discerning to fulfil this labour by slow prudence to make mild a rugged people and through soft degrees subdue them to the useful and the good. Most blameless is he, centred in the sphere of common duties, decent not to fail in offices of tenderness, and pay meet adoration to my household gods when I am gone. He works his work, I mine. There lies the port. The vessel puffs her sail. There gloom the dark, broad seas. My mariners, souls that have toiled and wrought and thought with me, that ever with a frolic welcome took the thunder and the sunshine, and opposed free hearts, free foreheads, you and I are old. Old age hath yet his honour and his toil. Death closes all. but something ere the end, some work of noble note may yet be done, not unbecoming men that strove with gods. The lights begin to twinkle from the rocks. The long day wanes. The slow moon climbs. The deep moans round with many voices. Come, my friends, 'tis not too late to seek a newer world. Push off, and sitting well in order, smite the sounding furrows. For my purpose holds to sail beyond the sunset and the baths of all the western stars until I die. It may be that the gulfs will wash us down. It may be we shall touch the happy isles and see the great Achilles, whom we knew. Though much is taken, much abides. And though we are not now that strength which in old days moved earth and heaven, that which we are, one equal temper of heroic hearts, made weak by time and fate, but strong in will, to strive, to seek, to find, and not to yield. Next is The Stolen Child by W.B. Yeats. The wonderful William Butler was awarded the Nobel Prize for his poetry in 1923, in the same year that Ireland regained its independence from England. This poem has been interpreted by some as a literal stealing of a boy by wicked fairies. However, I have always seen it as the more palatable explanation, perhaps even an attempt at solace for the unbearable loss of a child. As an Australian, I am aware of many stories about children lost in the bush. So much easier to imagine a child stolen by fairies than dying alone in the wilderness. So much easier to imagine our children protected from the horrors that humankind is capable of dealing them. The Stolen Child by W.B. Yeats. Where dips the rocky highland of Sleuth Wood in the lake, there lies the leafy island where flapping herons wake the drowsy water rats. There we've hid our fairy vats, full of berries and of reddest stolen cherries. Come away, O human child, to the waters and the wild, with a fairy, hand in hand, for the world's more full of weeping than you can understand. Where the wave of moonlight glosses the dim grey sands with light, far off by furthest rosses we foot it all the night, weaving olden dances, mingling hands and mingling glances, till the moon has taken flight. To and fro we leap and chase the frothy bubbles, while the world is full of troubles and anxious in its sleep. Come away, O human child, to the waters and the wild with a fairy, hand in hand, for the world's more full of weeping than you can understand. Where the wandering water gushes from the hills above Glen Car, in pools among the rushes that scarce could bathe a star, we seek for slumbering trout, and whispering in their ears, give them unquiet dreams. Leaning softly out from ferns that drop their tears over the young streams. Come away, O human child, to the waters and the wild with a fairy hand in hand, for the world's more full of weeping than you can understand. Away with us he's going, the solemn-eyed. He'll hear no more the lowing of the calves on the warm hillside, or the kettle on the hob sing peace into his breast. Or see the brown mice bob round and round the oatmeal chest. For he comes, the human child, to the waters and the wild with a fairy hand in hand, for the world's more full of weeping than he can understand. And now a poem I've often read to children, who seem to have loved it as much as I do. It's Overheard on a Salt Marsh by Harold Munro. Nymph, nymph, what are your beads?
Green Glass Goblin, why do you stare at them?
Give them me.
No.
Give them me, give them me.
No.
Then I will howl all night in the reeds, lie in the mud and howl for them.
Goblin, why do you love them so?
They are better than stars or water, better than voices of winds that sing, better than any man's fair daughter, your green glass beads on a silver ring.
Hush! I stole them out of the moon.
Give me your beads. I desire them.
No.
I will howl in a deep lagoon for your green glass beads. I love them so. Give them me. Give them.
No.
Belgian-born Harold Munro is perhaps better known for his prose than his poetry, which is a shame, for he loved poetry above all things. He was, however, a champion of other poets. He had a magazine called the Poetry Review, and he also owned the Poetry Bookshop in London, from which he published many fine poems. Wilfred Owen apparently lived over the shop for a while. You will hear some of Owen's poetry in a future podcast if you tune into The Touchstone. So now I'd like to read you a poem by Judith Wright, an esteemed Australian poet. Judith Arundel Wright was born in Armidale in the New England district of New South Wales in 1915. After studying at Sydney University, she moved to Queensland. She lived near Braidwood, New South Wales, for the last 3 decades of her life, however, to be near her lover of 25 years, H.C. Nugget Coombs, a famous public servant who worked in Canberra and was a tireless advocate for Indigenous Australians. Judith Wright died in the year 2000. South of My Days by Judith Wright. South of my day's circle, part of my blood's country, rises that tableland, high, delicate outline of bony slopes wincing under the winter. Low trees, blue-leaved and olive, outcropping granite, clean, lean, hungry country. The creeks leaf-silenced, willow-choked, the slope a tangle of medlar and crabapple, branching over and under, blotched with a green lichen, and the old cottage lurches in for shelter. Oh, cold the black frost night! The walls draw in to the warmth, and the old roof cracks its joints. The slung kettle hisses a leak on the fire. Hardly to be believed that summer will turn up again some day in a wave of rambler roses, thrust its hot face in here to tell another yarn, a story old Dan can spin into a blanket against the winter. 70 years of stories he clutches round his bones. 70 summers are hived in him like old honey.
Driving that year, Charleville to the Hunter.
1901 it was, and the drought beginning.
60 head left at the McIntyre, the mud round them hardened like iron.
And the yellow boy died in the sulky ahead with the gear. But the horse went on, stopped at the sandy camp and waited in the evening. It was the flies we seen first, swarming like bees. Came to the Hunter, 300 head of 1,000, cruel to keep them alive. And the river was dust. Or, mustering up in the Bogongs in the autumn when the blizzards came early. Brought them down, we brought them down, what aren't there yet? Or, driving for Cobbs on the run up from Tamworth, Thunderbolt at the top of Hungry Hill, and I give him a wink. I wouldn't wait long, Fred, not if I was you. The troopers are just behind, coming for that job at the Hillgrove. He went like a loony, him on his big black horse. Oh, they slide and they vanish as he shuffles the years like a pack of conjurer's cards. True or not, it's all the same. And the frost on the roof cracks like a whip, and the backlog breaks into ash. Wake, old man, this is winter, and the yarns are over. No one is listening. South of my day's circle, I know it dark against the stars, the high, lean country full of old stories that still go walking in my sleep. The last poem for this episode is one I have adored for as long as I can remember, The Love Song of J. Alfred Prufrock by Thomas Stearns Eliot. It caused a great deal of controversy when it was published in 1917, for it is an early modernist poem which broke with many traditionalist forms and fancies. Eliot was born in St. Louis, Missouri, in the United States, in 1888. He moved to England in 1914, becoming a British subject in 1927 at the age of 39, when he renounced his American citizenship. He died in his Kensington home in London in early 1965 of emphysema. In 1948, he won the Nobel Prize in Literature for, and I'm quoting here, his outstanding pioneer contribution to present-day poetry. The Love Song of J. Alfred Prufrock by T.S. Eliot. Let us go then, you and I, when the evening is spread out against the sky like a patient etherized upon a table. Let us go through certain half-deserted streets, the muttering retreats of restless nights in one-night cheap hotels and sawdust restaurants with oyster shells. Streets that follow like a tedious argument of insidious intent to lead you to an overwhelming question. Ah, do not ask, what is it? Let us go and make our visit. In the room, the women come and go, talking of Michelangelo. The yellow fog that rubs its back upon the window panes, the yellow smoke that rubs its muzzle on the window panes, licked its tongue into the corners of the evening, lingered upon the pools that stand in drains, let fall upon its back the soot that falls from chimneys, slipped by the terrace, made a sudden leap, and seeing that it was a soft October night, curled once about the house and fell asleep. And indeed there will be time for the yellow smoke that slides along the street, rubbing its back upon the window panes. There will be time. There will be time to prepare a face to meet the faces that you meet. There will be time to murder and create, and time for all the works and days of hands that lift and drop a question on your plate. Time for you, and time for me, and time yet for 100 indecisions, and for 100 visions and revisions, before the taking of a toast and tea. In the room, the women come and go, talking of Michelangelo. And indeed, there will be time to wonder, do I dare and do I dare? Time to turn back and descend the stair with a bald spot in the middle of my hair. They will say, how his hair is growing thin. My morning coat, my collar mounting firmly to the chin, my necktie rich and modest, but asserted by a simple pin. They will say, but how his arms and legs are thin. Do I dare disturb the universe? In a minute there is time for decisions and revisions which a minute will reverse. For I have known them all already, have known the evenings, mornings, afternoons. I have measured out my life with coffee spoons. I know the voices dying with a dying fall beneath the music from a farther room. So how should I presume? And I have known the eyes already, known them all, the eyes that fix you in a formulated phrase, and when I am formulated, sprawling on a pin, when I am pinned and wriggling on the wall, then how should I begin to spit out all the butt-ends of my days and ways? And how should I presume? And I have known the arms already, known them all. Arms that are braceleted and white and bare, but in the lamplight, downed with light brown hair. Is it perfume from a dress that makes me so digress? Arms that lie along a table or wrap about a shawl. And should I then presume? And how should I begin? Shall I say, I have gone at dusk through narrow streets and watched the smoke that rises from the pipes of lonely men in shirt sleeves leaning out of windows. I should have been a pair of ragged claws scuttling across the floors of silent seas. And the afternoon, the evening, sleeps so peacefully, smoothed by long fingers, asleep, tired, or it malingers, stretched on the floor, here beside you and me. Should I, after tea and cakes and ices, have the strength to force the moment to its crisis? But though I have wept and fasted, wept and prayed, though I have seen my head grown slightly bald, brought in upon a platter, I am no prophet, and here's no great matter. I have seen the moment of my greatness flicker, and I have seen the eternal footman hold my coat and snicker. And in short, I was afraid. And would it have been worth it, after all, after the cups, the marmalade, the tea, among the porcelain, among some talk of you and me, would it have been worthwhile to have bitten off the matter with a smile, to have squeezed the universe into a ball, to roll it towards some overwhelming question, to say, I am Lazarus, come from the dead, come back to tell you all, I shall tell you all. If one, settling a pillow by her head, should say, that is not what I meant at all, that is not it at all. And would it have been worth it, after all? Would it have been worthwhile, after the sunsets and the dooryards and the sprinkled streets? After the novels, after the teacups, after the skirts that trail along the floor, and this, and so much more. It is impossible to say just what I mean. But as if a magic lantern threw the nerves in patterns on a screen, would it have been worthwhile if one, settling a pillow or throwing off a shawl, and turning toward the window, should say, that is not it at all. That is not what I meant at all. No, I am not Prince Hamlet, nor was meant to be. I am an attendant, Lord, one that will do to swell a progress, start a scene or two, advise the prince, no doubt an easy tool, deferential, glad to be of use, politic, cautious and meticulous, full of high sentence, but a bit of juice. At times, indeed, almost ridiculous. Almost, at times, the fool. I grow old. I grow old. I shall wear the bottoms of my trousers rolled. Shall I part my hair behind? Do I dare to eat a peach? I shall wear white flannel trousers and walk upon the beach. I have heard the mermaids singing each to each. I do not think that they will sing to me. I have seen them riding seaward on the waves, combing the white hair of the waves blown back when the wind blows the water white and black. We have lingered in the chambers of the sea by seagulls wreathed with seaweed red and brown till human voices wake us. And we drown. So that's it for my first podcast. Thank you for coming to my place. You may come again at any time you like. It was lovely having you here. If you want to suggest a poem for me to read, you can always email me at cjsusurus@gmail.com. For now, it's goodbye from me, CJ, until next week, and another episode of Touchstone. Bye.